So this is called writing for the Ovale open mic. Oh, mythologized Monday nights, you are the main reason I write. To hold the helm of the open mic with words that smoke and spark. I want to set the hayloft on fire, then put it out with poet tears. And when all of the smoke clears, they will clap so hard, the floorboards will crack in ecstatic applause. Drink glasses will jingle to the table edges and fall and smash into quartz. The Long Valley will bar me. I will take my leave majestically. And black stains from the flames will forever speak my name. Before hitting the peaks of my ego trip, I will need to find something to write. I could try to write like Sylvia Plath. I will sit at the typewriter and bleed as I write by exhuming, ruminating. I worry that I will cross the fine line between poetry and diary. I see myself standing at the open mic, setting my childhood loose on the room and it's knocking over pints. Poets sighing and rolling their eyes, trying to dry their notebooks. I'd be a swamp of regret, stood at the mic, wanting to die. I could try to be the technical kind, who write villanelles and sonnets, stick rigidly to form and rhythm, and talk about nature, and use words like hemlock and bigot. Sail them away in a John Keats dream. But I know this just isn't me. Before long, poets would notice one begotten word misused, and I'd be nude at the open mic, using a thesaurus to cover myself. You know what? I'll stick to what I know, writing my little camp poems. After all, it's called Ovale, not O'Dohoen.
Thanks, Jim, and congratulations. Next up, we're going to hear the poems of Ted O'Regan, who has three shortlisted poems in this year's competition. Ted O'Regan.
Centenary. Eyes level with the tabletop, I watched Father mending nuns' umbrellas, great black spike-winged creatures swirling as he snipped the florist's wire that bound back broken rings. He hated waste, enjoyed the triumph of repair, came of age in our fledgling state and watched the spoils go to the well-connected, felt unfairness keenly, saw it play out in his life, some lives around him drift away on the boat to Britain. 100 years of sun and rain, of moonlit ink-black nights have come and gone since he was born to live his short life in much pain, to fizzle out and cough it all away. Today's elite is still connected, insulated. Work has changed, but willing pairs of hands like his are squeezed by 0 hours and rising rents. Trolley queues are part of what we are. Some parents have to fight for respite care. Blackguard banks are rampant, unrepentant. Human life is on the scales. Ideals, a decoration. Ireland boys, hooray, it's gone astray. And this is called How We Are. It's in a similar vein. They are everywhere. The garages, two-storied, stone-fronted, a discreet distance from the house, stuffed with stuff, bigger than 1970s family homes, larger than the cottages that sheltered our forebears from bitter wind and rain. Today, we build bigger, better garages than homes to house the homeless. It's how we are. They are everywhere, collectors, selling limes or flowers or lollipops just outside shops or churches at weekends. With burning zeal, some jiggle boxes, buckets, seek support. It's always a good cause. It's how we are. Our rulers long farmed out essential care and service in this state. The church ran with that ball, controlled the game. Between them, they made Ireland what it is. Devalued words like mercy, hope, and trust, but always worshipped money, markets, the few bob. This lets us glow with pride. We're doing well. Our ships save migrants, hand them into others' care. Move on. It's how we are. Our people die on streets, in tents. Their passing passes, skates our screens, becomes peripheral once more. It's how we are. In this unhappy land with fig leaf skirts of charity. And on a gentler note, this is called Amber. I fell into a cold frame once while Father yarned with Ger, the convent gardener, lifting onions. I walked out along those slender wooden ribs between the panes that cracked under my weight. I sank beneath the rhubarb leaves, heard shards of snapping glass. My shouts brought rescue, relocation to the kitchen, TCP for cuts, and hot, strong tea with scalding agar scones to salve my wounded pride. I scoffed with butter oozing lips, cocooned within this chorus of concern as nuns fussed round the hungry child. Some 60 years have passed. That convent is mothballed. Cloches and cold frames are seldom seen. My choristers have gone to graves or small domestic billets. Dutch rhubarb sells in shops. Our onions come from Spain. Spurious scones are everywhere, but I remember oceans of daylight that flooded in across my childhood sands to gild my playing days in amber. And seeing as forgiveness is easier to get than permission, I'm going to crave a few moments of your time and read a few lines I wrote back in 2014 for my wife, who's back there, and who supports me so generously. This is called Coracle for St. Valentine's Day. Medieval Irish boat builders started with the gunwales, wove a basket of arches and stringers into space, wrapped their wooden cage in cowhide, turned it upside down, and trusting, they got in. Our lives are so designed. Scraps of loving kindness bind the hides that bear us out to waters yet unknown. Loving, trusting, we get in.
Thank you, Jade. Next up, we have previous winner of this competition, Derek Sullen. He's going to read his highly commended poem, and hopefully another poem or two. So, Derek.
Well, I'm very grateful to be in the company of such great other poems. They're marvellous. This is called A Dream of My Dead Grandmother in the Modern Art Museum. It's based on a real dream, actually. I had a dream about my mother, actually, walking through a modern art museum and being who she was, being rather shocked by everything she saw. But I thought that probably for most of you it would be more the generation of your grandmother, so I changed it to grandmother. But, A Dream of My Dead Grandmother in the Modern Art Museum. Between the Cézannes and the Bracts, I lost her. Somewhere she is straying. Her pre-Raphaelite eyes look at urinals, popes, splatters, drips, drops, stone spirals, woven twigs, slash canvases, nudes, running, leaping, squatting, cramped, splayed, soiled shoots, newborns in nooses, shit in a can, halved carcasses. I want to rush in and protect her from shock, but the ever-vigilant attendants tell me all things are equal to the dead, and art will transform her. They show me on a screen her tiny grayscale figure, crossing a threshold into hyperrealism and beyond. People around me whisper artists' names, amplified in the marble halls to an onward rushing wind. Has she seen Hans Bellmer's dismembered doll yet? Banksy's Queen Victoria in dominatrix gear. Installation with disemboweled piano. It's also far from King Cophetua and the Beggar Maid. Obedient to gallery regulations, I catch up with her among the wrong Muicks, standing on a plinth that's been provided. A plaque is on the wall, mid-20th century woman with bag. A static teardrop bubbles in her eye. I'm not allowed to touch. And I'll read one more poem by permission. It's called Street Vendor Southwest China. It's about street vendor in Chengdu, China. A vendor has buried her face in her lap, rocked back, hips on heels, arms folded across her knees, so that her silhouette seems headless, compressed to a cube of fatigue. Loaded each end with baskets, the pole completes the geometry of a cell, its shadow on her neck. A burden set down is still a burden. But these are pretty wares, with red and green and yellow trimmings, with woven lids like temple roofs and flared openings. Perhaps we're wrong to read the position as despair. It's new, it's hot, so she creates her own shade, fits herself to the most economical shape a human skeleton allows. Later, she'll set off on her circuit of the town, an independent businesswoman, the street her market. We'll never know how she'd rate our pity, and whether she would pity us for burdens that we carry in our heads.
Thank you, Derek. Okay, just two more poems in this section. One of our judges is here tonight, Rab Urquhart. The other, Kathy Darcy, couldn't make it this evening. Two people who I omitted to thank earlier. So thank you, Rab, and thank you, Kathy, in her absence. Rab's going to now read the second highly commended poem written by Margaret McCarthy, who couldn't make it tonight.
Aurora tilts of Aurora tilts a bowl of ambrosia, warm gold fills the morning sky, and there appears a murmuration, an exuberant celebration, as starlings fill the air. In a tempo of their own design, they become a beating heart as they swirl and sweep and somehow keep perfect and united time. Without meaning beyond beauty, they fly close as though conferring, then separate and almost disappear. Each new form shape is clear, yet tantalizing and transient. All belong, and age, sex or shape, or any difference at all, is absorbed and assimilated, accepted and so negated. They become pure energy. All who watch feel it happen, as under the marmalade sky, without touch or speech, beyond earthly reach, souls commingle among starlings.
Thanks, Rob. Okay, so I'm going to read the winning poem by Jill Munro, who unfortunately couldn't be here tonight. It's called Ptarmigan. Do any of you know what a ptarmigan is?
I've heard.
Yeah, you do. Great. Okay. It's like a kind of a grouse.
Yes.
Yeah. Yes. Here we go. They're in the UK and Canada, I think.
And male.
They
don't live in the UK, they live in Scotland.
Oh, well, there you go. That's right. That's right. I apologize. There are no ptarmigans in the UK. Okay. The five words were glow, wind, word, burn, and peripheral. Ptarmigan. His parents named him to reflect his rocky Highland birth. Inflicted school days full of silent peas and cries of lousy grouse from other boys. A painful need to spell out his name at every turn until his words became a stony croak, his weeping a burning cough. As he grew, peripheral snowshoes formed around his feet. His blood brewed with fighting, coursing hormones. His head comb swelled, upright with no need for gel. He found a mate, slugged off his dull buff childhood. The pale glow of his name had almost hidden him until, luminous in the soft white of winter's plumage, just his black tail feathers were rippled by the wind. So Jill will get to hear this from the podcast, and she'll be getting the actual version of this, which I haven't brought out because it's wrapped up so nicely by Michael Ray in a box next to me. But that'll be posted off to Jill tomorrow, along with a few copies of this. So, thank you to all the shortlisted poets. Congratulations. Okay, so we've got 10 contributors going to read from five words. They're going to read someone else's contribution. And the first up of these 10 is Bernadette Gallagher.
I don't think Niall Herriot is here tonight, but I'm reading Niall Herriot's poem from August last year. And the words were rose, eclipse, saxophone, corrosive, and loud. New heritage. Jazz rose from the street, loud and proud, to accompany the poetry in the hayloft. That saxophone, rather than corrosively eclipsing the spoken word, encouraged image making.
Thank you, Bernadette. Next, could we call upon Joe Sweeney?
Thanks, Paul. Now I'll just take off these spectacles. And I'll try and read the poem. This was written by Margaret Creedon O'Shea. Oh, it was indeed. The Creedons, they're a great clan. And she was the winner on the 3rd of July in 2017. And the five words are retrograde, practice, chieftain, chicken, and ethnic. Very easy. And she got around the whole thing very cleverly. She called it Retro O'Grady. Retro O'Grady, they called him then, maintained his hoary ethnic identity. He practiced reels daily on his clapped-up mandolin, fancied himself the chieftain of Harlem, always operated his 60s sound system modem. "They're no match for me," he'd say, "those chicken tribesmen with their foreign notions. No Paso Doble could hold sway to my stack of barley." There in his garret, on his beanbag, complete in retro chic, plastic chairs, orange, cubist, retracted pupils from last night's Coors Light, or was it the cocktail he copied from that James Bond film again, practiced retropulsion, his back shoe shuffle, retroversion, always kept one eye behind him. Until one day, in the need of a G-up for propulsion, he was projected on and now found himself ahead of time, way too fast to win the Fla Ciola of Harlem. Retro O'Grady left behind his windshield wipers clapping time with Bobby McGee, way behind on the winning stakes records, and now he's selling vinyl.
Oh, Ray, Joe. Congrats, Max. That was great. Next, Ray Hanrahan, please.
Nice. Just this the one I'm going to read. This one was written by Kevin Griffin. I don't know if Kevin is here, but that's one that really stood out to me when I looked in the book. And the five words are specimen, legal, fingerprint, euphoria, and thereabouts. Untitled. After that first encounter, that early euphoria or thereabouts, she kept thinking specimen. She always held that euphoria was a movable feast, or rather a recurring banquet, best in small doses, and so an ongoing fountain of sensation, sensation, she thought, a word with passive and active implications. She could still feel his hands on her arms and wondered if he left fingerprints. Love prints, she kept thinking, no, not thinking, sensating. Once, when looking up a word, she saw the word dactylogram, which she now recalled means fingerprint. Why was she worried? All was legal, or thereabouts, and specimen, now intrinsically linked with euphoria, was on the move again. She loved such phrases as thereabouts, little fences, she called them. She thought they slowed life. But now, what the hell, specimen and euphoria were on the scene again, and everything was, if not moral, at least legal, or thereabouts.
To Ray and to Kevin in his absence. Next could be a Patricia Walsh.
I have a piece by Ciara McCartan. The words were, "The Celebrate Festival caught golden and venomous. I used to be a baby, but I never ain't gotten it caught. Crawling around carpets and scheming the secret plots, like pulling on the ears of my mother and crying on a cue. Decelerating my crawl to lie on top of you, a festival in the sitting room. Circles in the kitchen, sometimes coughs I'd be sneezing, sometimes rashes itching, sometimes venomous bee stings, while sitting on the garden, sometimes strange aromas, after I've been. Give golden beginnings, be a forever pardoned." Thank you.
Thanks, Trish, and thank you, Ciaran. Next, we have Jim Quickard again.
I'm going to do one from Ali Bracken. It's called Pink Pedagogue. "If you pedagogue me, I'll pedagogue you. Pedagogy of the oppressed. Nothing is endless except the idea of infinity. Overhead, the albatross moves motionless across the sky. Oh, look, Pink Floyd. I'm learning. Teach me. Trouble me. I've learned more from Pink Floyd than I have from my undergraduate. Am I under a graduate? Am I the undergraduate? Oh, look, Pink Floyd echoes. Overhead, the albatross swims motionless across the sky. I am you, and what I see is me. It's called Metal, isn't it? It was the third album. No, the fourth. Don't meddle with me. Don't trouble with me. Pink Floyd or the Beatles? Pink Floyd, definitely Pink Floyd. What does it mean again? If you pedagogue me, I'll pedagogue you.
Thanks, Jim. Next, Stammy Knot.
So many choices. There's actually a couple of poems that weren't winners that I really liked that are not in the book. That's not a criticism of all, it's just an observation. Okay. So I'm going to go with one from Matthew Moynihan. I was here the night of this one, actually. One on the 12th of June, 2017, the words were serendipity, salacious, razor, swoon, and left. And it's titled See You Next Tuesday, / From One Conservative to Another. Dear Arlene, I'm writing you today in rays of symbiotic serendipity, requesting you swoon against the salacious left and join me for a meme of snakes at number 10. Dress code is Thatcher. Cover every orifice of your skin to scrape your subhumanity into the spotlight. I look forward to working with you, to blame our societal scars on those who are not working. We are, as you know, as shrewd in leadership as we are shrewd in aesthetic. By Good Friday 2018, let us have destroyed our piece of peace. We need your loyalty, which of course, your battered bunch knows all about. See you next Tuesday. From one conservative to another, Theresa May, MP.
And conservative isn't really spelt very conservatively, is it? If you have a copy of the book, you'll see that. Thanks, Dan. And thank you, Matthew, in his absence. Next up, we have Megan Cronin.
I was actually going to do a different one, but someone else said it. So mine is actually by Matthew Moynihan as well. And I was here the week he wrote it as well, and I thought it was just amazing. So this is, Bless me, poets, for I have sinned. And it's the five words were metrics, spiral, indignant, Cain, and Sisyphean. If I pronounced that right. Bless me, poets, for I have sinned. It has been 4 weeks since my last confession. Despite the poet's work being a Sisyphean endeavour, it pains me indignantly to tell you, to let you inspect the darkness in my spiralling bones. Here are my sins. 1. The concept of measuring metrics chills my soul. 2. I don't know how to write a Shakespearean sonnet. 3. It pains me to read Keats' poetry. He will never be my priest, whether or not he feigns a cane. 4. The only form of form my retinas can withstand is my own. And even this I find challenging. 5. I rarely use ink and pen, unless anger pulses in my veins. 6. Netflix is more pleasurable to me than reading, unless it is Platt's Belger. Yet here I am, and I lament in your poetic grace. I know what I must do for you, your grace. 10 short sonnets, and a glory be to the poets.
Thank you, Megan, and again, Matthew. And next, could we call upon Max Greedon O'Shea? Who is also responsible for 5 pages of fantastic sketches in the book. Thank you, Max.
Joan does such a lovely job in my poem. I'll have to do his little tiny Ulysses of Crockett. A strange day. Some days, oh, sorry, discombobulate, copulate, frustrate, copperlight, kangaroo. A strange day. Some days can be strange, very frustrating, surreal almost. I parked my car outside the Imperial and was getting out when a figure on a bike appeared out of the morning mist. The cyclist in some sort of uniform stopped. "Your car is not parked properly," she said. "Are you a guard or something?" I inquired. "Reserve," she said, "community policeman." "Oh, I get it, a kind of copperlight." I reparked the car and when I looked around she was gone, back into the mist. Had I imagined it? The strangeness, however, was only beginning. And when I went into the hotel toilets, as we all do at the Imperial, I heard heavy breathing and pushed across the door of the cubicle as if perhaps there were two people inside trying to copulate in a confined space. Then I heard a man calling out in distress in a Scottish accent, "Pardon me, I dinna wish to discombobulate you, sir, but I'm in a wee bit of a pickle." "What is it?" I said nervously. "What is it?" "The bloody door is jammed and I can go
through." Thanks, Mike. Thank you, Joe. Kira McCartan, please. I interrupt this moment for a small bit of housekeeping. See if you have one of these cool books that are around. If you go to page 58 and get a pen out. And see there in the last line of that poem on the right hand side of the page, on page 58, or the last verse of the poem, and it says muddled hour, or it says muddled out in the book, it should say muddled hour. Just said I better put that note in,
okay.
Because it'll end up being in the next anthology, and then apologies at the back. Oh, I missed it. Anyway,
I see what you mean.
I'm just saying, for your reading pleasure in the future, if you want to make sense out of what's going on there, it's supposed to say error. Anyway, I'm going to do a poem by Phillips Plan. I thought he was trying to spell Sean Lee Lynch's name at the top of the poem, but it actually is Han Allah. It was the winner on the 11th of December 2017. The five words were cold, banner, brew, leather, and festive. Can I ask you, can you cook my dreams? Brew them in a saucepan till they're thick as leather, and mix them in sugar, spices, and things that are nice. Knit them so I can wear them like mittens, and are deep with untold imaginative fairy tales. I ask you because I trust you, as whoever is concocting my dreams these nights cooks them into nightmares that are dark, unfestive, and are very cold. Please make my dreams into good dreams, inspired by a banner of our love.
Thank you, Kieran. I'm Philip, and next is Philip Spillane.
Thank you, Paul, and thank you, Kieran. That means a lot. I don't have time to pick up on yours, but you're a very amazing poet, so thank you. This is by Niamh Bagnall, and I remember this being read out back in June, and I thought it was very creative, made out of just the five words. The five words were body, ship, planet, palm, and avalanche. The reader of palms was overly calm as he sold me a planet of riches. He spoke of the lambs and how serious their qualms could be fed to a palate of witches. So I stepped on a ship intended to slip to the east when the avalanche landed. But my body was tipped on the side of my lip. To the feast was like nothing intended. Like a terrible something was bended and into the mist ever ended. The palm reader promptly was unfriended.